Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey friends, good morning and welcome to another episode of Taking It Outdoors. We are well into whitetail season, archery season anyway, and we're going to continue that conversation this morning as we welcome into the studio some guests sent over by our new friends at the Outdoor Group. Let's say good morning to Paul Vakunas. What's happening with you? Good morning.
Good morning. It's remarkable that I can even have a conversation today.
Yeah.
The first leaf turned color and deer season is on.
I know, man. It's been a grind here this first week. The weather didn't really cooperate, and that's part of what I want to have a conversation about today is hunting in the rain, hunting in the wind, and, of course, some other things that we'll certainly encounter as we go through bow season. So Paul's in studio with us. Paul, give us a little bit about your hunting background, your outdoor resume, if you will.
Well, it's a pretty interesting resume. Of course, like a lot of the fellows that are listening, ladies and gentlemen, we are whitetail junkies and very comfortable in our space here today. Been a seasoned bow hunter. I'm 51 years old. Can't imagine another greater sport or a better place to be or something to do in October.
Did you find bow hunting early in life?
I did.
See, I did. I was in my 30s.
Yeah, yeah. No, I found bow hunting at a very early age and had opportunity, of course. You know, growing up in Canada, then having moved down here about 25 years ago, it just expanded everything in terms of how you actually get close to these animals. It changed the whole game for what you get out of that experience.
I've been bow hunting about 10 years. And, you know, like I said, I found it late in life and I've learned a lot and I've improved a lot. I just can't begin to wrap my head around how good I would be right now had I started as a teenager. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd probably have my own line of bows or something. Definitely my own TV show. A little sarcasm. Cut me some slack, folks. Right. Jeff, also in studio with us. Do you hunt or are you a scientist?
Yes and yes.
Tell me about it.
I'm a mechanical engineer, but I have bow hunted. Not recently. It was 24 years ago when I was 14. Started gun hunting waterfowl at 12, which I still do today. So I'm more actually of a gun hunter. Than I am a bow hunter, but I know my way around a bow.
Now, you are the engineer behind the new Cam-X A4 crossbow by the Outdoor Group. I was first turned on to this when we had some other representatives from the company in studio with us about a month and a half ago. Actually, I had to get out of town for a funeral last week, so y'all got a free replay. Be sure you tell them you got the best of segment last week. But the Cam-X A4 crossbow is really a sweet machine. The competition in the crossbow field has certainly grown. It seems like it's become kind of I wouldn't say a flooded market, but a lot more people are getting into it. What sets the Cam-X A4 apart from other options you'll find in the stores? Coming from the guy that designed it.
Well, the cam system is very different in that the cams are not directly attached to the limbs. So there's a swing arm system. So I'm really a gearhead at heart. So most of my designs and things like that will come from either motorcycles or cars. So if you look at the cam system, it's really a suspension system. The main deal there is it's pretty much like a swing arm on a motorcycle or a four-wheeler or any of those type of
I understand what you're saying. Give me some specs, though. Like, give me miles per hour. What are we talking here?
Well, if we're talking miles per hour, it would be 252 miles per hour, but we generally talk in feet per second. So in this case, it is 370, and that's with a 390 grain arrow. So speed is up there for sure. So it's at that speed and grain weight, it's about 118 foot-pounds of energy as it comes off the rail.
Wow, Smoke City. Have you greased one with one of these yet?
I have, yeah. So the cool thing about this crossbow and the downstream of the engineering speak that Jeff is talking about, and it's remarkable technology, patent technology, is that, you know, the crossbow category has just recently caught up to, you know, the size of the market that it is. The crossbow business has actually been in a lag for about 5 or 6 years. And the new technology that we have, if you put this into something that, you know, a viewer can imagine or a listener can imagine, if you have the kitchen that has the drawers or the cupboard doors that you can't slam shut, okay, those cushion drawers, that's exactly what happens when you have the swing arm suspension system. So the arrow is actually about 15 yards downrange, and the cams have actually fully, you know, developed the shot cycle, and the arrow is on its way. But the suspension system, you know, slowly and gently catches up to the shot at the end. And the net benefit of that is it's the quietest crossbow on the planet.
I was just about to say, what's that do to the volume?
Right, right. So speeds are impressive, and all crossbows shoot fast, but nothing is more impressive than a quiet crossbow when you're looking for a tool for deer hunting. And that's the name of the game, is quiet.
It makes a noise, but it's still screaming, but they can still jump you. You know, it can happen.
They can. And again, here's another visual that your listeners can enjoy. You know, the difference between a crossbow that doesn't have this system and the one that does, the suspension system, is if you clapped your hands or you pounded your chest, that's the difference.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a nice, gentle, soft thud versus a very abrasive to your ear and aggressive, you know, sharp clap. And deer would react completely differently to a clap versus a thump.
Another thing that I really found intriguing about the Cam-X A4 by the Outdoor Group is I was blown away by the scope. I'll shoot you straight. I got a Striker Solution LS. I bought the year we did the pilot program. So what's that, 6 years ago at this point? And my reticle, you know, I'll zero it in at 25. Then my next spot is 15 yards away. So I'm having to do math, and I really got to practice and practice and practice so I have that confidence with this thing. But the scope on this A4, it seemed to take a lot of the...
guesswork out?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think the guys told me that out of the box from the factory, you guys are promising to get 1-inch groups. Is that right?
Yeah, we sight in every bow that comes off the line gets shot both for speed as well as to ensure accuracy. So every bow probably sees about 5 to 10 arrows, we'll say, just to ensure that we're getting the speed. And if, however it's assembled, if for some reason it's not, then, you know, we tweak here and there, put a couple twists in the cables and make sure that we make speed. And that 370, by the way, is not an up to, that's a minimum.
Oh, holy smoke, man. Yeah, man, they're getting so much faster. It seems like every year, there's a new tweak that just makes it scream even faster.
To your experience, think about the downstream effect of what Jeff just said. With a crossbow is pre-sighted in from 10 to 100 yards right out of the box, your rangefinder talks to you in multiples of 1 yard at a time.
Right.
Right? And if your scope talks back to you in multiples of 10 yards, that's pretty easy, you know, adjustments if you have to shoot a deer at 12 yards or 22 yards or 27 yards. When you're having to do an arithmetic like you're talking about with other optical, you know, platforms, that's an opportunity you missed because sometimes your moments are fleeting to make the shot. So we simplify that process by the work Jeff's team does with the pre-sighting effect.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk field experience here. What are you putting on the end of your bolts? Like, what would you recommend as far as a broadhead?
Sure. So the first place I start with is matching the weight of the field point to the broadhead, which would be 100 grains. And that keeps the system intact for the work that we do pre-sighting it in. And because crossbow shoots so fast on a relatively short arrow, mechanical broadheads are my choice. And the one that we choose is the Slick Trick Raptor Trick. And a couple tenets there that actually make that broadhead so impressive is, one, if you're going to shoot arrows that generate 118 plus foot-pounds of kinetic energy, you don't want aluminum ferrule. So the Slick Trick is 100% stainless steel construction. So you're going to hit ribs, you know, you're going to hit some larger boned animals. You don't want a ferrule that's going to fold and fail you. So the platform of that broadhead also has to have the same strength built into the blades. So every blade that we produce in Slick Trick is 35 thou thick.
And this Cam-X A4 crossbow, born and raised in Henrietta, New York.
Yes, it is.
Fantastic, man. Again, I think a lot of people are unaware of that. You know, that I know the guys came in a while back for a recruitment interview we did with them, and I just learned so much, man. And I had no idea that all this was being manufactured and even designed right here in our own backyard. We do want to continue the conversation. It's all about deer hunting today. That's the plan. I want to talk opening day, Monday of this week, raining like crazy. Tuesday, more of the same. Wednesday, overcast in the morning, and hope I maybe some breaks of sun in the afternoon. This first part of deer season, it's a crapshoot with the weather. You got to be able to adapt at whatever's come. Just looking at the extended forecast, we're going 50s, 60s, 70s, 50s, 80s, 70s, you know, so we're gonna have to hunt in all sorts of weather conditions. So let's start the next segment in that. I want you to kind of coach me up on hunting in the rain. I know a lot of guys, especially those that aren't the sick and twisted outdoorsmen, they're quick to throw in the towel on a rainy day, but I'm here to tell you that may not be the best decision you could make. And we'll start the conversation there next, right here at Taking It Outdoors on 92.5 WBEE. This program made possible thanks to Johnston RV Country, where they are celebrating 30 years of creating generations of family fun, and Webster, Palmyra, and online at jrvcountry.com. Also, Bentley Brothers Kubota in Brockport and Albion. Save a horse, ride a Kubota. Hey friends, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors, talking a little whitetail hunting today as we are well into archery season, and we are joined in studio by Jeff Hansen and Paul Vakunas. They are sent over here from the Outdoor Group, talking all sorts of things, hunting products, bow season. All of it is on the board today. This morning's broadcast made possible thanks to Johnston RV Country, 30 years of creating generations of family fun, in Webster, Palmyra, and online at jrvcountry.com. I know they got their RV show going on out at the mall, so if you got some time to kill and you're on the market for a recreational vehicle, a trailer, Class A motorhome, whatever you're in for, be sure to check them out over there at Grease Ridge Mall. Also, Bentley Brothers Kubota in Brockport and Albion. Save a horse, ride a Kubota. Let's talk hunting in the rain, guys. I have tapped out of so many hunts because of the rain. I don't want to go sit there. I don't want to get wet. You get wet, it's hard to get warm. You know what I mean? And I've thrown in the towel on many hunts because of the rain, even though I've spent money through the nose on rain gear.
Right.
I'll just tap out. But I'm going to tell you, on the days that I have gone into the woods on bad weather days, it doesn't seem to affect the deer the way it affects me. They still have to eat. They still have to be social. And I was out on Monday. You know, I had to work in the morning, opening day. I go out in the afternoon, it's just a steady rain, all day long, steady rain. And I kicked up deer walking in at noon. I saw deer probably every hour, you know, all day. They were on the hoof all day long. And even was sending them scurrying out of the bean fields on my way out after dark.
Right.
Your experience hunting in rain.
So let's understand that for me, rain is your friend and so is an overcast day. So think about the experience that you have in there. So rain is generally brings cooler temperatures. Rain, oftentimes the noise of the rain actually can camouflage your movements for your exit and entry into the spot. But most of all, what it does is that it knocks down scent. The deer's nose works a lot better when it's moist. Okay, let's give that as a fact versus being dry conditions. But when it knocks down your scent and it allows me to get in closer to the deer, especially early season, that's when rain is your friend. If we're talking about a drizzle, regular deer hunting pattern, it won't change your movement at all. But a hard rain or torrential rain like we had on Monday, okay,
yeah,
where, I mean, like your wiper blades are on high, that kind of rain, deer certainly don't move in that. But they're on their feet as soon as that's over. So if you're watching the Weather Channel and other apps on your phone, you want to be in that tree maybe an hour and sit in the rain for just about an hour. Because as soon as that rain stops, then all the deer get back up on their feet. They do hunker down for bad weather like we do.
Sure.
But the regular drizzle, rain is your friend.
So So if you're watching the hourly forecast, mm-hmm, all right, and I got to pick a stand location, and I can see, all right, it's going to rain up until about 2 hours till dark. is that a field edge situation? Is that hunting in the woods situation? Like, what's my strategy there?
So your strategy, so this time of the year for me, early season, up to say maybe the first 10 days, deer largely going to socialize and remain on largely a feeding pattern. So the movement hasn't changed a whole lot, and the deer herd is generally all intact and together. So for me, it's afternoon hunting only, not morning hunting. And by the reason I choose afternoon hunting is it allows my entry into the stand to be super stealthy and quiet. And then I'm also trying to have to fool more deer because the deer aren't dispersed. So scent now becomes a big part of my scent control method becomes super and hypercritical. So that's when I don't use any kind of attractants. I generally don't vocalize at all. I just want to be a ninja and just ambush these deer. Because I'm generally to shoot the bucks, you got to let maybe 10 to a dozen does and smaller deer get out in front of you. And the buck's always going to be late and last. So you got to make sure that you're virtually invisible to the rest of that deer herd. And they're going to probably get out in front of you a long ways before the buck shoots. So I would summarize early season hunting up to your hunt really is about a half an hour hunt of productive hunting time. That last little bit of shooting light, that big deer is always going to come dead last.
Yeah, but I'll still take that time for scouting and peace of mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll go out there a little longer than that. That's interesting, man. Does seem to happen, you know. I mean, now that you say that and I'm thinking about it, I can think of scenarios where light switch and then holy crap, what's going on out here? And that's the best.
Yeah, and when I say a half an hour hunting, you're probably going to be in the tree, you know, longer than that. Your hunt is going to last longer, but the productive hunting hours are going to be just those last waning hours of daylight, especially early season. They're not going to be on their feet.
So right now, if I'm really, you know, I got a couple shooters out on my place, and I maintain that my best chance at these bucks on my specific situation, you know, everybody's different, is early season. I'm in an agricultural situation where I am, and I just have found historically this first 2-3 weeks of the season, I have my best crack at my trophy bucks. And I'm not saying I won't have them later. But my strategy, like say during the rut, if I want a trophy buck, I'm hunting the doe.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. But right now, what am I doing? Am I hunting food?
You are hunting food, right. Yeah. And so what happens early season is like in a strategy, I don't ever expect to kill a deer the very first try on him. What I do expect to do, though, is keep developing my strategy to when he's going to be the most vulnerable. So there's measurements of how vulnerable he is, you know, now. Early season compared to the rut compared to late season. So I like to start on the food edges, and as the season progresses, work my way deeper into that, you know, security zone or his innermost space as the rut comes together.
Now, at what point will we have to readjust? Because in my experience, and you hunt around here, they're going to go nocturnal pretty soon.
Yeah.
Largely.
Yeah. Halloween is kind of a kickoff day when that pattern changes again. So you're hunting now deer that largely haven't been intruded on.
Yeah.
Unless you've been in there messing with your cameras too much, leaving scent everywhere. But if you're disciplined, you stay out of there, check your cameras, rely on your scouting, and go in on the first couple of days, and it's scent-free and they're not disturbed, that feeding pattern is going to be undisturbed, and you got a really good crack at them. But every time you go back in there, right, long after you leave, those deer have a chance to investigate where you've been.
Sure.
Younger deer and does not nearly as intolerant as that as a big buck is. He picks you off one time, he comes later. Or he moves in deeper. So now, as the rut gets closer, Halloween, okay, now you start intruding on his space, and he's on his feet for more daylight hours. So the later you go in the season, you can get a little bit more aggressive, and the deer becomes a little bit more sloppy in his travel patterns. And that's when that intersection of time and his habits change, where you got a really good crack at him.
Now, as I'm honing in on the trophy bucks, you know, and say I know where they're feeding, I know where I believe them to be bedding down, maybe I'm hip to certain travel corridors, but, you know, if we're hunting later out in the afternoon, they're still bedding midday, right? So we're trying to get them from bedding. We're trying to ambush them on their way to strap on the feed bag. But I don't want to get too close to the bedding area because that could screw me for the rest of the season.
Right, right. So in New York, most of our woodlots are typically smaller, especially for hunting in the suburb zones, maybe only 20 minutes out of the city. Those blocks of timber, 5 acres, maybe 25 acres, your margin of error or your safety zone might only be about 50 yards in off the field edge before you start to get to a place where they'll hear you or see you. So you want to stay in that early season zone, maybe only as deep as 50 yards. Past that, you're really risking bumping that deer and giving him an education that he's being hunted.
Yeah, I know, man. I uh, I love it. I can't wait to get back out there. I mean, as you're sitting here talking to me, I'm picturing my hunts later today, tomorrow. I love it, man. It's my favorite time of year. Problem is, there's too much to do right now, man. You got bow season going on. The steelhead and the salmon are coming into the streams. The brown trout are right behind them. Forget about the perch fishing right now. You know, there's too much to do. But whitetail is on the board today, and we continue the conversation right here at Taking It Outdoors in the next segment. Paul Vakunas is our guest in studio, also Jeff Hansen. The guys were sent over from our new friends over at the Outdoor Group, a great, great organization. The website, TOGLLC.com.
That would be the parent group, but you can go brand specific if you're interested in grunt calls, dualgamecalls.com, you know, CamXCrossbows.com, EliteArchery.com. You can go right down the list of all of our brands, the broadheads we talked about, SlickTrickBroadheads.net, and just right on down the list and actually get a great education exposure to all of our products.
All right, get those calls ready. Let's play with those in the next segment. We'll be right back. This is Taking It Outdoors right here at 92.5 WBEE. Hey friends, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors. We're having some fun today talking a little deer hunting as we are well into archery season. Our guests in studio are Jeff Hansen and Paul Vakunas from the Outdoor Group. This morning's program is made possible thanks to Johnson RV Country. 30 years of creating generations of family fun in Webster, Palmyra, and online at jrvcountry.com. Also, thank you to Bentley Brothers Kubota in Brockport and Albion. Save a horse, ride a Kubota. Now, I mentioned our guest. We were introduced to them by our new friends at the Outdoor Group. And at the end of the last segment, Paul kind of gave you a quick rundown of some of the brand specifics that are under the Outdoor Group umbrella. But one of those is Dual Game Calls.
Yes, sir.
And man, years ago, I got, and I still have it and love it. I don't even know if y'all make it. It's a Dual Game Call. It's a Blodgett. I think it's a turkey call. It's a slate call. And my God, my turkey, I'm telling you, it's the best thing to happen to my turkey hunting, that call. And I don't even know if y'all make those things anymore, that specific turkey call. Right. But that's how I got turned on to the Dual brand. That was gifted to me a while back. So I'm familiar with some of your turkey calls, but you got some grunt tubes there, right?
We do. And this is actually a grunt tube. And if I could just emphasize the point, it is so important to have a grunt call in your arsenal of tools when you deer hunt. I would rather forget my rangefinder at home than go into the woods without a deer call.
Come on.
It's that important, because can your rangefinder bring that deer closer to you?
No,
sure can't.
But if you don't know what you're doing with one of those,
right,
it's not more important than your rangefinder. Right. Fair?
So, nothing. Yeah, your rangefinder will never move a deer from 100 yards into bow range.
But I've scared away good bucks trying to grunt them in.
Right. Okay, so let's... So that's a conversation. We have this very often in seminars. We get the same question. Hey, I grunted at a deer. He didn't react to me. Or I grunted at a deer and I blew him out of there. And that's if you're just blindly calling to a deer and not really understanding, you know, that I want to have a conversation with the deer. That changes the whole way that I use a grunt call. I want to have a conversation and say, everything is cool over here, or everything is safe over here. Come this way.
But in order to do that, you need to know how to manipulate that call, number one. You got to know how to read this whitetail's body language.
Yep.
And you got to know the spectrum of sounds that deer or any whitetail will make in certain situations.
Correct.
And acquiring that information is only done by spending time in the woods.
Right.
You've done that more than I have.
Right.
So coach me up here.
So the conversation I want to have with the deer is I want to play to his emotion, and I want to play to his dominance or his age structure in the deer woods. And when I do that, I have to have a call that gives me the full age structure and vocalization potential of the entire herd. And I do that with one call. I don't want to walk through the woods with calls around my neck like jingle bells trying to do, you know, all the different vocalizations. So the Stretchback has 7 vocalizations all in one soundboard. I know we can't see it on the radio, but you can see here right now I have this down in the adult buck position, right? It goes all the way up to the fawn bleat position on the backside. So I typically run my call in the adult buck position.
So
that's what I'm hunting for, is an adult buck.
So that could replace my can and
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Cool. Go ahead. Continue, please.
So we also have a stretch tone tube on here that's soft and it's rubber and it's pliable. It doesn't sound like an accordion and it's also silent. And so what this allows me to do, and here's a scenario that most hunters listening to the broadcast can understand. You've grunted to a deer and he's 100 yards away and you wonder, did he even hear me or is he interested? He didn't turn his head. He didn't even turn his ear. Well, when you make that grunt call, if it's not because he didn't hear you, right, generally it's because he's not interested. Because you're the wrong age class of deer. So I always start out, the first time I see a deer, I'm going to start out as a 2.5-year-old deer, maybe 3-year-old deer. And in this position, with the tube collapsed, it just sounds like the average deer in the woods. And it sounds like this. Right? And I don't get a reaction. Now what do? He's still walking. He's going to walk out of range pretty soon. And I call this hooking the deer. So I'm going to change the vocalization on the fly, just like I would change my voice in an argument. I'm going to amp it up a little bit. But by pulling on the tube, maybe just an inch, now I'm an older deer. So to give you the comparison, a younger deer, older deer.
And so the idea is the younger buck will feel threatened by you making the older sound?
The opposite. The older deer won't feel threatened or even curious about that younger deer. He keeps on walking. He hears that all day long. He hears a deer that's a little bit closer to his age class. Now you might have his attention.
Yeah.
If you really want to challenge that biggest deer that you're looking for, then you extend the tube almost the whole way. And now you sound like you truly are a 250-pound testosterone-charged animal. So here's your oldest deer. That's your oldest deer.
Imagine he's long in the tooth.
Yeah, and he's got that big chest to give you that deep, robust, guttural grunt sound.
But do you want to sound too dominant? I mean, because you don't want to, you don't want to be boss hog, right?
Well, it depends on who I'm challenging. If that deer is 140, 150 inches, that's what he sounds like. If he's an 80-inch deer, maybe a spike horn or a three-point deer, he sounds like the first vocalization. So when I set my expectation of the deer that I'm trying to harvest, I want to have a conversation with him at that level. And here he comes.
The guys that I've learned the most from in my journey as a bow hunter, I've kind of been taught, or at least the example set before me, is the less I can take into the woods the first part of the season, the better. But, man, you're kind of selling me on the opposite. I normally don't start taking my antlers out and my calls until a couple weeks in, but now that I'm sitting here and you're telling me this, on opening day, I heard sparring in the afternoon.
Sure you did.
Last year, remember last year opening day? We got a freak cold snap. It was like in the upper 30s that day, and I had full-blown sparring and dogging on opening day. And if you'd have told me that, the last day of September, I said, you're nuts. I ain't seeing that in the morning.
Right.
But it happens.
It does. And remember, those deer, they talk to each other all year long. So that noise that you hear, you may not be able to hear it when you're glassing across the deer field, but sure as we're sitting here today having a conversation with you, they're talking to each other as well. Now, it just depends on what are they saying to each other, early season versus later season.
What else can you tell me?
So the other thing, your experience with that original dual turkey call was the success that you had was all about realism. Right? So we don't make calls that sound like they're made by Fisher Price or Tonka. We build in technology that actually gives you some realism. So we have a patented technology called dual chamber. And the best way to explain this to the listeners is that if anybody listening today would call home right now and your husband, wife, or child had a cold, at the very first word when they said hello, you know that they have a cold, right?
Right.
So something is wrong. And if your call isn't, designed for realism as the first priority in the design, then nothing you can do with that call is ever going to bring that deer close to you.
As a waterfowl hunter, I know firsthand the importance of tuning my duck call.
Yeah.
So I can see why it would be the same with the buck call.
Yep. And it's not uncommon for guys to say, once I try to do a game call, all that other deer call, this goes in the box in the garage somewhere, and they take only one single call to the deer woods.
Yeah, I like to roll out there as light as possible. So if that can replace a handful of things in my bag, that'd be fantastic. Now, just to calling in general, how will my strategy change as we move closer to the rut and even beyond it?
Right. So let's say the rut really, when you talk about rut activity, what we see, the rut actually starts as soon as the deer start to shed their velvet. That technically and scientifically is the rut. But the behavior change comes about Halloween and later. Cooler days, the herd's dispersed, and bucks have already asserted their dominance. We're seeing things like terrain features become important, right? So like side hills and pinch points become important, more so than the terrain feature that the deer made, which would be a scrape or a rub. The deer make that, we don't. You know, God makes the terrain, and that's what they relate to. So let's change our strategy to hunt terrain and pinch points. And so what I like to do is, first and foremost, if I see a deer and I can see his reaction, that's going to dictate how much I call, how loud I call, and the cadence that I call. But if I haven't seen the deer, I want to start, you know, putting some insurance in my bank account. So I want to start to blind call a little bit. And when I do that, I'll call about every 15 minutes, and it's more so just with some contact grunting. It's not super aggressive until I see the deer. So that contact grunt is very short, and I'll switch that up into some tending grunts. That creates the illusion that something's going on over here, if a deer can hear me, right? And he's walking around, and in 15 minutes, a deer can cover a lot of territory. That's why I use 15 minutes. That could be 200 yards for a deer,
sure,
even moving slow.
Now, when you're doing this blind calling, am I starting out with a younger deer,
yep,
the sound I'm sending out?
Yeah, I'll start with a three-year-old deer.
Okay.
I'm trying to harvest a deer that's 2.5, 3.5 years old. And so I'll start out with that. Once I see the deer, right, then I can measure the response and actually draw him closer. The one thing that I'll never do is when those ears, those radar guns are pointed right at me, I don't want to pinpoint where I am. So I'll never call him when he's looking dead at me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm convinced that if you dug a hole 6 feet in the ground and you called from, you know, down on that hole and that deer's 100 yards away, he'd walk over and look down the hole. Because
yeah,
their ears are, you know, left and right. They're side by side. They can actually triangulate where you are. It's remarkable how they'll walk right to your tree.
That's another waterfowling philosophy, too. You
okay,
call the wingtips and tail feathers because the same reason. They'll bust you.
Yep, yep. So when I get a reaction and he comes towards me, I'm not calling at all. I'm getting ready. Because he can break from that little stutter step walk that they have,
yeah,
to a full-blown charge. And you've seen that happen with turkey. Turkeys will strut their way in, or sometimes they'll come on a dead run.
Yep.
Expect that same reaction from a deer and be prepared for either way. Coax that deer in with a grunt call or get ready for the charge.
Yeah, man, yeah. I watch it on TV and I get so jealous of these guys. I mean, I'll be out there and I'm like, meh, meh, you know, whatever noise I'm making. That was my mouth, not one of their calls.
Yeah, good footnote.
But, you know, I see them on TV, you know, I'm trying to do my thing and I'm scaring them off. And you see them on TV, man, and it's like the guy is sweet talking them and they just come in on a string.
Right.
And look, I know they tape for 4 months to get that 30 minutes of footage. I understand that. But it's still impressive,
mm-hmm,
that you can manipulate that and, you know, the just time, I guess, man. Time and practice.
And a lot of it is confidence, right? Because
yeah,
we've been taught for so many years, you know, to be deer hunting, you got to be stealthy and you got to be quiet. And it's very timid. It's very intimidating, rather, to actually make something sound loud in the deer because you think you're betraying your presence. No, you're just making a sound that sounds just like them. So go ahead and give it a try.
Good stuff. Paul Vakunas is our guest in studio. We also have Jeff Anson here. He's the engineer of the Cam-X A4 crossbow made by the Outdoor Group right here in Henrietta. Be sure to check them out online. We got one more segment to go, and we're going to talk some more whitetail hunting. And that happens next right here on Taking It Outdoors at 92.5 WBEE. Hey, gang, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors. Having some fun today with Jeff Hansen. He is in studio with us. So is Paul Vakunas. They are from the Outdoor Group, a great company right here in Henrietta that makes a broad spectrum of hunting products, from broadheads, mechanicals, fixed. We just did a segment on their game calls. We opened this morning's program with their great new crossbow, the Cam-X A4. Jeff is the engineer that designed this sweet machine, and he's in studio with us. If I want to, what's the Cam-X website again? Is it Cam-X.com?
Yeah, it's Cam-X Crossbows.com.
Yeah, go on there and check it out, man, and see for yourself. We can do, I thought we did a good job of painting a word picture of this crossbow, but you put some eyeballs on it. It'll pass the eyeball test for sure. So go to that website, camxcrossbows.com. Now, the hunters that have already purchased this crossbow or maybe prior versions of the Cam-X, what do you find that they like the most about it?
Definitely like how it shoots. So as we started earlier when we were talking with the swing arm system, and as we call it, a suspension system, it really is that. So going back to my motorcycle analogy, that, you know, when you have suspension, you isolate the road from yourself, right? So if you're going down the road, imagine without any suspension at all, you would feel absolutely everything. So yeah. That's the easiest way for me to try and describe it through words is when you pull that trigger and it fires, that's it. Like, it's quick, done. It doesn't sit there, doesn't resonate, doesn't ring in your ear, and obviously it's not quiet. So I think that's what most people, when they pull the trigger, they kind of turn and look a little bit dismayed because it's not what they expect.
Now, I've shot other brands. I mentioned the kind of crossbow that I have in the past, or that I have currently. I wouldn't say that it has a recoil. Right. I don't know how I would describe it. It's not a recoil,
you call
but
it
it's
a jump.
Not... It's not nothing.
Yeah, they jump. I mean, it's physics, right? So if you're going to send something in one direction, you're going to get an equal and opposite reaction the other way. So it is a little bit of a kick. It'll come a little bit in the shoulder, but same thing with the limbs, right? So the limbs move in a direction, so everything's going to react opposite to that. That's the other thing that's nice about this bow is at full draw, the limb tips are parallel. So the direction in which they react is more left to right than forward or back. So that also helps that perception of jump, because it's on all directions, right?
Yeah, we call that feedback in the archery. How much feedback do you get from the bow?
Now, how does it feel holding it? Mine is real top heavy. Like my front support arm, when I'm firing, I shoot left-handed. So my right arm, I'm holding a lot of that forward weight here.
Yeah. So using it as a hunter, the experience that you're gonna get
is he's balancing it.
The riser. Okay, if I took the bow apart, I could tuck the riser, which is what holds all the limbs together. Okay, I could fit that in your shirt pocket over there. It's that small. So by balancing the front end back, we call it rear of center balance point. It's 7.9 pounds. This crossbow balances beautifully right where your forehand would hold the crossbow. And Jeff, right now in studio, he's balancing on the palm of his hand just like a trapeze act.
Just like a great knife. You know what I mean? Just has that perfect balance point. Oh, is awesome, dude. Yes. Yeah, he used his hand. What would you call that, like the fulcrum point?
It was just the palm of my hand. So it's pretty much center mass of the bow is right under the front of your hand.
I don't even get commission, and I'm selling these things. That's cool.
And something that you said earlier, we're very kind to mention that we're manufactured right here in the suburbs of Rochester, of Henrietta. Well, being a New York manufacturer, we're the only high-performance crossbow that's New York compliant for the laws. So there's restrictions.
Yeah,
there's restrictions on the width of the bow, the speed of the bow, etc. So in both planes, width of the bow and speed, we're New York compliant.
All right, Mr. Engineer.
Yes, sir.
I'm loaded my crossbow. I'm up in my tree stand. It's a terrible day. I don't see squat.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I'm cocked.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to put an old field tip and shoot it into the ground, or can I uncock this crossbow?
You can, but you can uncock this crossbow.
Come on.
You can.
Talk to me.
So of course you can't see it, so it's hard to
Sorry, paint
fully
a word picture, man.
We can paint a word picture. We'll paint a word picture. So this crossbow, the manual cocking is done with a sled. The sled has a rope that goes down and back around behind the back of the stock, right? So, envision kind of a, if you can envision a block and tackle, but it's
so
a pulley system.
I can let it down in the same way I cock it.
So you bring it up. Yeah, it takes another step or two, but the sled itself, there's a center tang in the middle of it that will disengage the anti-dry fire device. So it acts as if there's an arrow inserted temporarily to allow you, when you lift up, put two handles in your hand, you lift up, and you can, as you let forward, you push the safety off.
And that's not going to get away from me and blow
me up?
At
that point, nope. Not. So then you can switch. It sounds super complicated, and I promise you it's not. I believe there's a video on our website that'll help that. But you would switch to one hand. You lift up. You gently pull the trigger, and you can let it down.
Those are all deliberate motions. You're in total command of that crossbow when you do that.
All right, I just got the engineer version. Now you tell me the field version. Okay. You ever walked one of these things down in a tree stand?
So what I do is actually I never have to let it down in the tree stand. I always wait till I'm safe and secure on the ground balance point.
Yeah, that's safer. Mm-hmm. I wish
I wouldn't have said that. Go ahead.
Right. So oftentimes, I'll do it right at the base of the tree. Most oftentimes, depending on what state you're hunting, right, you can't have a loaded or even cocked crossbow walking out of the woods in the dark. And sometimes it has to be with a case lock put into the case. So that's how I use that feature, is to make sure that when I'm walking through the woods, the crossbow is in the safest position that it could be in. But back to an earlier point, you're trying to sort of summarize, you know, the experience. So, and the word picture that came to mind is, you know, if you're largely recruiting someone from the gun hunting season that wants to try the crossbow as their introduction to archery, you can sum it up like this. It's speed and accuracy without the noise. Rifle hunters are impressed with speed. They certainly have an expectation of cloverleaf accuracy at 100 yards. We deliver that, but we don't have the bang that a rifle does.
No.
That's what it is.
Shoot me straight with this 100 yards nonsense. Mm-hmm. Really? 100 yards?
Right. So I'll take that one on, because I'm going to encourage everybody to go to the website and watch us shoot 100 yards on video. We do that so you can see it. Right?
Okay, because I've been told that. And
yes,
my crossbow that I have, mm-hmm, it's really old. It'll shoot 100 yards, but good luck determining where it's going to end up.
Right.
But I've never had a situation in the field.
Right.
Where I've taken a crossbow deer more than 42.
Right. So the movement has been, with technology improving, that crossbows have extended our effective range. And yes, we too can shoot 100 yards. We put it on video and you can shoot it. The scope, in fact, is pre-sighted into 100 yards. We're going to give you the tool to make that shot, you know, should you want to take it. Here's the difference, though, in the conversation. There's a wide gap between responsible hunting distances and then recreational fun distances.
Right.
So even in our reticle, we illuminate only to 50 yards. And so our reticle changes. So we have dots out to 50 and chevrons past 50. So you're going to hunt in the dots and have a whole lot of fun in the chevrons past that.
It's too risky.
But here's the accuracy. All the 100-yard shooting that you see on video, and there's other manufacturers and video out there that you might stumble upon, they're always shot off of a bench with a lead sled or under a control condition on a range or in a field, whatever. When you're in a hunting situation, you can't take your bench with you, right? It's not practical. It's always a freehand shot. Our crossbow actually holds the world record for accuracy, which is all freehand shooting. We won the world record and beat the field last year at the IBO World Championships by 19 points. We embarrassed the field, and that's all freehand shooting. And you'll see what we do in the video. We shoot off the bench, shoot a cloverleaf shot, and I stand up and I freehand it, and I popped a balloon at 100 yards. So the tool is capable of it. The question is, are you? So we'll give you the goods to do it.
Yeah, I would never shoot an arrow at a deer from 100 yards away.
Right.
But I want to know that I could.
Yes.
Yeah. What would your guess be at arrow drop? How much do you think you'd have to hold over?
With mine or yours?
Any.
100 yards.
So we'll just say ours.
With the crossbow, and we're going how many feet per second?
370.
18 inches.
So this is why you might not want to take the shot, because it's 9 feet.
Yeah, the loft is as high as 9 feet. Even
exactly.
With today's technology, who wants to make that shot?
Yep,
Nobody.
Why we have engineers, folks, and not idiots like me designing these things. Right. Well, guys, we're up against it, man. This hour has certainly flown by. You guys have really done a fantastic job today, and I want to thank you for your time. Again, Paul Vakunas is our guest in studio. Jeff Hansen, I was introduced to these guys today by our new friends over at the Outdoor Group. You can learn about the Outdoor Group's a big umbrella, and a lot of products underneath it. It's TOGLLC.com. And then from there, you can go to the different broadheads, the dual game calls, the Cam-X crossbows, and how many products do you have?
Like, nine brands.
15, 20?
Nine brands, about 2,000 products.
All right. Well, I was jazzing you up a little bit. Let me talk to the investment bankers for you.
All right.
I'll do it. Guys, thanks for your time. Good luck in the field.
Thank you.
Certainly
thank you.
Be safe, and hopefully our paths will cross again soon.
Indeed. Hunt safe, hunt smart, and good luck, everybody.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.